2007 still. It's the Joint Ways and Means Education Subcommittee and opening up a public hearing on House Bills 5021, 50, and 5020, the State School Fund, School Improvement Fund. Today we have a public hearing and we've had some invited testimony. So with that, I'm going to call up Mr. David Williams from the Oregon School Boards Association and Kent Hunsaker of the from the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, who are going to lead us off today. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
And we get an apple to start the day. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for having us today. David Williams, Oregon School Boards Association. And I won't bore you with any of my tireless stories. We'll hopefully cut to the chase this morning. We have for you a couple of school districts to talk about the impacts of your decisions on the state school fund and how they relate to local districts in the field. I will note that one district regrettably could not join us this morning, the Sandy and Canyon School District from just up the canyon in Mill City, trying to give you a flavor of that really small district in the state and how your decisions impact them. I have submitted testimony that they provided that they edited somewhat from testimony they provided previously in the session, gives you a flavor of the small jurisdiction. I will just add from the statewide perspective, the Oregon School Boards Association couldn't be more happy with the progress that we are making on K-12 funding this session, and very much look forward to the ability of a lot of districts out there to begin to do some great things around student achievement, and hopefully you'll hear some of that today. I know this is not currently the purview of the committee, but it will come up at some point. I do want to express our concern for some of the other bits in the co-chair's proposals, especially regarding community colleges and higher ed and Head Start, which are all part of the education continuum, and hopefully we will find resources in the state budget to fund all of those programs at ideal levels, not just K-12. And with that, we'll have Ken Hunsaker from Confederation of School Administrators continue to serve the statewide perspective and the coalition proposal. I will point out that I think tomorrow you're hearing from a panel of teachers that will be distributing a brochure similar to the coalition funding proposal that you have that Ken's going to talk about, that the coalition put together a sampling of districts around the state and how these budget impacts will impact them. So you'll get, again, more of the 100-foot level as opposed to just the 50,000-foot level, and they're just finalizing that for tomorrow. So with that, I'll be here and happy to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Williams. Mr. Hunsaker.
Chair Galizio, members of the committee, Kent Hunsaker, Executive Director for the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on the state school fund appropriation for 07-09. We certainly want to applaud the co-chair's proposed appropriation of $6.245 billion for K-12 education for the 07-09 biennium. That appropriation would get schools to almost 80% of the quality ed model. This level of funding for schools will result in most school districts in the state having much greater capacity to serve Oregon students and families. We also hope that the May revenue forecast and other deliberations that are going to go on throughout the rest of the session will allow K-12 funding to get to the goal that we had hoped for in the coalition proposal, which is $6.3 billion that you have in front of you in the materials that we handed out. I wanted to make a couple of notes. Please note that, first of all, that I said most school districts, and one of the things that's difficult in this state right now is that we have school districts all over the map in terms of what their costs are, what their current funding situation is, and I know you're aware of that, but I just want to point out several outliers, you would say, and I'll start out with the Multnomah County school districts. As we all know, Multnomah County's had NITACs, that those districts are coming off of that. that we have received information from several of the districts that their roll-up costs would be in the range of $6.7 billion to $6.8 billion. We've heard that the Portland School District at 6.3, and with their local option, is going to be able to maintain programs that they've had in place now under the proposed ITACs before. In addition to that, we have districts across the state, and I know you're going on the road. So as you go on the road, you will hear from some districts of the things that they're going to be able to add and improve, and you're going to hear from other districts, some that are declining in enrollment, some that have various circumstances that would not allow them to do anything much but to fund the current programs rather than adding a lot. Some of those districts are Coos Bay, and Coos Bay has been in declining enrollment for some period of time, is still operating this school year without a full school year. Lincoln County is one that we received information from that their roll-up costs were right at $6.3 million. So you're going to see some of that. And then there are some very small school districts across the state where even though it's a quite a large number rolling up, if you get $500 more a kid in a really small district with 100 kids in it, it's not a lot of money when you look at it that way. So you're going to see some small districts that are saying we're going to have difficulty at the $6.3 billion level. I want you to know that since this summer, districts have been doing planning around looking at what would happen if we had $6.3 billion. So as you go across the state, folks are going to be able to tell you what that means to them. We asked them to prepare it. You're going to receive a sample on Wednesday of 23 districts, sample districts that we put together that would give you an idea of the impact of that level of funding. When we throw out big numbers sometimes, like $6.3 billion or $6.245 billion, it kind of takes away from what does that mean to school districts. And what I wanted to do was to give a better picture that the school improvement fund, which we had calculated at $300 million under 6.3, would result in $208 a kid more for school districts across the state. So you can take that $208 a kid and say you're in a district with 5,000 kids. That means an extra $1 million pretty much above your roll-up cost to invest in education. I like it better that way because when you talk billions, it doesn't mean as much as when you talk $208 a kid. That means something, and it's pretty easy for anybody to calculate what that would do for their district. I wanted to point out several differences between the governor's budget and the proposed co-chair. You know, the governor's budget was $6 billion for the base budget for the state school fund, and then $60 million that would go into a school improvement fund. The co-chair's budget is $5.985 billion, or $15 million less than the governor's budget in a base budget, and then $260 million into a school improvement fund. Obviously, the total is 6.245 versus the 6.06. The difference I wanted to bring out is that the base budget is down by $15 million with the co-chair's proposal, and that there are a whole variety of things that would further reduce the base budget that are being looked at by the legislature. And on that list are mentoring at $5 million. At one time, that was included in the Department of Ed budget, but now it's not anywhere, so the assumption is that would come off the top. The Oregon Virtual School District, at $2 million, would fit in that category. Senate Bill 47 would cost about an additional $1 million for audits. House Bill 2614, which is the Collaborative for Educational Excellence, which is a way to better coordinate staff development, would cost $1.2 million. The High Cost Disability Fund, Senate Bill 211, allocates additional $12 million to high-cost disabilities. There's a nutrition bill out there that I think there's estimates that would cost school districts about $2 million more. There's a PE bill out there that would cost about $6 million more. And there's a full-day kindergarten bill out there that would cost about $100 million more. So all of those things, depending on what happens to them, will further reduce the base budget. That's currently the co-chairs is 5985. I added up the ones that seem most likely to be about $21 million. So what I'm saying is that the co-chair's budget is about $15 million below the governor's budget, and that there are items that are out there right now that seem pretty likely that would add up to be another $21 million. So you can see that 5985 now goes to 5964. And right now, school districts have received estimates at $6 billion. They have not received anything since the co-chair's budget has come out, obviously. We're providing information to them. The number that we use, by the way, is that for every $100 million above the $6 billion that's out there right now, that would result in $70 per kid more. Every $100 million, $70 a student more. I wanted to point out the brochure that's out. Most of you have had access to it before. It goes over a variety of things that we talk about in terms of the coalition proposal, and I wish to recognize our partners in this proposal, the Oregon Education Association, Oregon PTA, Stand for Children, the Oregon Small Schools Association, the Oregon Association of ESDs, AFT of Oregon, OSEA, and the Oregon School Boards Association, that are all members of the Call to Action Coalition. We appreciate the opportunity again to address you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Hunsaker. I mispronounced your name at the beginning. I apologize. I had a quick question. So you listed Senate Bill 47, the audits, House Bill 2614, Senate Bill 211, and others in terms of things that might impact the final number that goes to K through 12. So in your estimation, then, for us to make the best decision, we probably should wait before we pass out a school budget.
I think it's really important as we look at the what is put in the base budget versus what is in the school improvement fund, that those things be taken into consideration as a part of that. That the more we take away from the base budget, one of the problems that we actually have, if you think about it, is that we're going to have school improvement fund dollars, and the co-chair's budget says $260 million, that there will be school districts that will have to go through some type of an accounting system to be able to switch money out of things they're already spending into the school improvement fund. Because, Portland's, the Multnomah County School Districts would be a good example of that. They're not going to be able to add. They're only going to be able to maintain. So that means that in many cases, they added when other people were not able to add. So now they can go back through and say, here's things that we added, and this is what our school improvement fund dollars go for. You're going to find other districts, and one of those districts is going to testify to you in a minute in Tiger Tualatin. I've seen their list of add-backs that they will propose doing in their school district. It's an impressive list of new services to students and families in their district. I'd like to say that list would be the case in every school district in the state, but because of the things I was talking about, that's not going to be the case.
So just following up, so are you saying, I'm trying to get an answer. So House Bill 5020 and 5021, would you suggest we wait until we see what happens with 47, 2614, and 211 before making a decision? Or do you think, what do you think this committee should do? What would be the most responsible thing for us to do?
I think it would be the most... Chair Galizio, members of the committee, I think it'd be responsible for you to actually look at, see what's happening with those bills before you pass something out of here.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Devlin?
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify on one item and just to agree with you on another statement. SB 211, the high needs, that, if my memory is correct, that has, in the previous session, been part of the state school fund as a deduction, just not at the same amount. And my understanding is when that change was proposed, it was universally supported. Would that be a fair statement?
Chair Galizio, Senator Devlin, that is an accurate statement. It is supported. It's a way to provide very targeted funding where it is needed. It's also the case that there are some districts that would not receive any of that funding, whereas if it was allocated per student, they would. That's why I was saying that you have to be careful when you have a base budget and you're allocating money, that there will be some districts that will benefit much more from the high-cost disability, additional $12 million than others.
And I did want to state for the record, Mr. Chairman, that one of your statements, or to characterize that I agree with wholly, is that when we sit here and discuss $6.245 billion or even $260 million in a school improvement fund, it sometimes just the numbers are so large that people don't understand them. And when the numbers get down, they're actually on the ground, and the impact on an individual school district, particularly when you look at what the impact might be on an individual elementary school or middle school or high school. The dollars on the state level may look huge, but when they get down to that level, they're not as significant as some people would portray them as.
Thank you, Senator. Yes. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does it make any material difference to school districts whether they get all the funds in the state school fund or they're divided between the state school fund reduced and then added into the school improvement fund? Does it make a material operational difference?
Chair Galizio, Senator Morse, I'm not answering that question because in a way the money's the money, but the reality is that the school improvement fund dollars will need to be separated out, and that means that they'll also need to be allocated to the menu of items that you have. We also have Senate Bill 318 is the one that says here's what you can spend those items on. When we have school districts out there that are, like I say, are pretty much going to be able to maintain what they have, then they'll be going through the exercise I mentioned, which is to be pulling things out that says we invested before, and here's what we're going to say is in the school improvement fund. We'll have other school districts that will actually be adding people, programs, and other kinds of things. So, to answer your question, I believe that the more that you can put in the state school fund grant base budget would be better, and that right now an estimate's out there at $6 million in that fund. What I'm saying is that the co-chair's budget has rolled that back by $15 million, and that there are at least $20 million worth of programs that are being considered that would also take off of that, which will mean less per kid in the base budget. So, my recommendation would be that base budget be at least $6 billion, because they already have an estimate for that.
Is that responsible?
Well, my concern is, are we doing what we can to help, or are we just confounding?
Chair Galizio, Senator Morse, I believe that you're doing a lot to help, and I hope that I stated that up front, that what you're going to see with this allocation is a big change across the state. It won't happen in every district, but when you receive the 23 examples on Wednesday, you're going to see some wonderful changes going on across the state. When you hear the testimony this morning from Tigard and Springfield, you're going to hear both good examples of what this means to school districts. You're doing a lot to help.
Well, I get to follow up, if I might, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is, would anything change if the state school fund was 6.24 or 6.3? What's different?
Chair Iglesias, Senator Morse, the difference is for every $100 million, about $70 a student. So if the state school fund was 6.2 versus 6.3, you can take any district and go 70 times the number of kids, and that means real things to those school districts. I don't know if your question, though, might not apply. Are you talking about would it be better to just have all the money in the state school fund rather than in the school improvement fund?
That's correct. And to the point being that if you're doing the same thing essentially anyway, then why are we making it more difficult to fund and track?
Chair Iglesias, Senator Morse, we would certainly be supportive of it all being allocated to the state school fund and delivered. We do believe that those choices, good choices, are being made by budget committees and boards and communities on the allocation of those funds. The general feeling was that this investment menu would be a good thing here in the legislature. We support it. We like it a lot. But in terms of ease, you're exactly right. It would be easier for districts to not keep track of that. The other thing that I want to mention along those same lines is that one of the things that happened with the school improvement fund the last time we had it, you know, it was with us a year and it was gone. All the things that are on this menu have ongoing costs to them. And so if it was, you put it in this fund and then later on it's gone, It would be devastating to add programs and then later on to have to cut them back out.
Thank you. And before I go to Senator Devlin, I want Darren was going to clarify something.
Members of the committee, I just wanted to clarify one thing. And Mr. Hunziker said a couple of times, just as a point, if you look at the total state school funding, which includes local revenues as well as state revenues, the co-chairs actually fund exactly the same level as the governor's budget. The expenditure side has not changed. There has become $17.7 million more on the local revenue side, which reduced the amount needed for the state portion of that. So actually, the co-chairs budget funds exactly the same essential budget level. And in fact, there is an additional $2.1 million above the essential budget level compared to the governor's budget. Just as a point of clarification.
Thank you very much. Senator Devlin.
That's the testimony I was going to put on the record.
Okay.
But I think that's, Mr. Chairman, I think that's a... we actually start to use these numbers all the time, both the essential budget level and the quality education model. And the EBL, the essential budget level, keeps changing depending upon circumstances, but we always look at that. And I know that on the school revenue forecast committee, we've had more and more discussions this time than we've ever had before on the accuracy of that model and some of the issues about why it may not be as accurate. And I think that's one of the reasons why both the governors and the co-chairs have put almost $200 million above the EBL before they've started into a school improvement fund, is because of uncertainties about whether the EBL actually reflects. And I think one of the things we've seen from previous testimony in the last session that is regardless of where we actually fund schools in total, there will be, if we're at this level, not where we fund them, but if we're at this level, there'll be a large number of school districts that will be in fairly fair position. There will be some that will have a little bit extra beyond what we would anticipate, but there are going to be some people that will be hurting still at this level, just like your testimony from the very beginning, that there are school districts that unless we were at 6.7 or 6.6, they will still be cutting at this level, particularly those that have lost enrollment and their enrollment continues to decline. So.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Members of the committee, if I could add a couple things just in response to some of the questions as well. to point out, first and specific to Senator Devlin's question about some of the proposals that take money off the top of the state school fund, I think you're absolutely correct that some of those are very laudable policy goals and very good programs that even COSA and OSBA at this table support. Just to put in perspective, when we talk about the state school fund, is that there are other mechanisms, and there's more dollars than this that are already on the books that come off of the state school fund before the dollars are run through the formula and distributed out to school districts. So it's important to keep that in mind when we talk about a $6 billion or $5.985 billion, that there are dollars that are removed from that before it goes to schools. When it comes to Senate Bill 318 and the accountability, I think, as Mr. Hunziker expressed, I think we would obviously prefer $6.245 billion in a single appropriation. In coming up with our proposal for this legislative session as a coalition partner and the entire coalition, we tried to strike that balance, respecting your desire to have more accountability over dollars and a desire to run those dollars more directly towards things that benefit student achievement, hence the proposals around the School Improvement Fund and Senate Bill 318, which I will note came out of the Senate on a 25-3 vote or something akin to that, a very strong majority of the Senate, and now headed towards the House. Lastly, just to, as it was the first mention in this hearing here, right at the end, the quality education model, just as a reminder for us all when we go through this exercise, that for all of us at this table, and I think for most of those behind me, our ultimate goal here is the quality education model and the full funding that it represents for our education system, and that, of course, being a state appropriation right now of about $7.8 billion, or about $1.5 billion above where the co-chairs are at. So we want to always keep that on the forefront of our thoughts as we progress towards the next several biennium towards full funding for quality education. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, with that, I appreciate the testimony today. Thank you for coming. Now I'm going to call up from the Tigard-Tualatin School District, Superintendent Rob Saxton, Board Chair Mark Chisholm, and then Roy Berling, the Business Manager for the School District.
Chair Galizio and members of the committee, the Tigard-Tualatin School District is delighted to present for you today and provide testimony. And my name is Mark Chisholm. I'm the chair of the Tigard-Tualatin School Board, and I'd like to introduce Rob Saxton, who is our superintendent, and Roy Berling, who is our chief financial officer for the district. And I think some of the characterization of our school district that was made earlier is probably pretty fair, in that it's sort of interesting. No one wants to be sort of described as average, but I think the impact of finances probably affects our district. Even though we are one of the larger districts in the state, it seems as though we kind of have average impacts quite often. So when bad times occur and budgets are cut, you can sort of view the impact on our school district as an average bellwether. During times where we are restoring some of those cuts, the kinds of restoration that you might see on average would be reflected in our school district. And this, I've been a school board member at this point for about 6 years, and this is one of the, it feels like good times. It's the first time we haven't been cutting in our school district over my tenure on the school board, and so you will hear from our superintendent the kinds of things that we're being able to restore during this budget cycle, and it really does feel terrific to be able to restore programs and restore efforts that are, we hope, will result in improvements in student achievement throughout the K-12 level. With that, I'm going to actually hand the floor to Roy Berling, who will talk about some of the historical perspective.
Chair Belizio and members of the committee, it's my pleasure or kind of my duty to talk a little bit about historical funding at the district, and I'd start back with the 01-03 biennium. That biennium, the legislature appropriated about $4.9 billion, and it ended up to be about $4.57 billion. Now, what that meant for the district is we cut 5 days from our licensed staff and 10-month classified employees, and 7 days from our administrative and 12-month classified employees. So that was about a reduction of about 2.5% of their salary during that year. We also froze spending on classroom supplies and technology, textbooks. Outdoor school became a fundraised activity rather than something that we supported. And I think we made a very conscious decision at that point in time to increase class size in an attempt to preserve program, with the idea that if we eliminated programs, it would be difficult, if not possible, to reinstate at some point in time. In the 03-05 biennium, $5.2 billion was initially proposed. That was eventually reduced to $4.9 after a ballot measure 30 was rejected and the taxes weren't approved by the voters. That was about $295 per student for the Tioga-Tualatin School District. And again, we looked at increasing our class size in an attempt to maintain the programs. For the 05-07 biennium, about $5.3 billion was received by the district. And I think there were some trigger revenues this last fiscal year that allowed us to add back things like $500,000, $500,000 for technology in our classrooms. So we went through and replaced old computers, primarily our elementary schools, for our teachers and our students. We also funded textbook adoption this last year to the tune of about $400,000. So it's allowed us to take some of those discretionary items that we had chose not to fund and actually refund those. I can tell you that the needs in our school are still great. For instance, we opened a high school, Tualatin High School, in about 1992, and we have virtually the same science equipment we opened that class at that high school with in 1992 we're still using today. So kind of our challenges are indeed still great. And in order to kind of put that into a perspective, Superintendent Saxton will compare our historic funding a little bit with the QEM model.
I do also want to make sure members of the committee, Chair Glazio, thank you very much for having us today. I also want to make sure that the committee does know that we have a local option. And our local option funds about 73 FTE in each year, and so that is a little bit different than some school districts. I did want to compare our historic funding level to the quality education model. When we start looking at funding that we have in our district and around the state, it's hard to find something to compare the dollars that we receive to over time. But one of the things that even though the number changes, it changes over time, it stays consistent in what it would fund is the quality education model. And so on the second page of the information that we provided you, we have some information about that. In the 03-05 biennium, the initial funding of $5.2 billion, in that year the quality education model was about 6.41, which was about 81%, so that the funding level of 5.2 would have funded about 81% of the quality education model. It ended up that year being about 77% when we were funded at 4.916, and I'm not going to walk you through all of those, but I will take you to the end, which would show that if we were funded at $6.3 billion over this biennium, as compared with the quality education model, which is at 7.86, that would have us at 81%, which would have been the amount that we would have been funded in comparison with the quality education model in the 03-05 biennium had the $5.2 billion stood, which I think is an interesting comparison, is 81% to 81%. A few other things. I think, as Chairman Chisholm said, our budget is a budget that's easy to look at and talk about, perhaps in numbers that bring it down to a smaller amount. We are representative of the state, but if you would look on the third page of the document that we provided you, and again, I won't walk through all of this, but it is a pretty decent budget to look at and understand how dollar amounts at the state level impact the Tigard Tualatin School District, because we end up being about 1% of the total budget. Of course, with the essential budget level, we'd be able to continue our current program or very close. Every district is a little bit different. $6 billion for us allows us to add $121 per student. Our ABM projection next year is ADMW projection for next year is 14,100 students, and so at $121 per student, that would be $1.7 million more for our budget. If you look at the 6.3, that's $329 more per student times 14,100 would be $4.639 million more for our budget. And the next bullet point, I've basically broken that out in $100 million increments starting at $6 billion to the $6.3 billion. And then lastly, the final bullet would show that for each $100 million at $70 per student, which I'm glad that's the number that Ken Hunsaker used, and that happens to be the same number we have used, so that's a good thing. Whenever somebody testifies before you, you hope the numbers are going to be the same. 70 times 14.1 is $987,000. So for each $100 million for our budget, it's almost $1 million to our district, because the $70 per student amount translates into about $1 million to our budget. And so it is a pretty good budget to look at and try to personalize what kind of dollars at the state level, how those translate into a district of our size. You want to talk about the community budget?
I'll talk about that briefly, Chairman Galizio and members of the committee. One thing that our particular school district values is community involvement, and with Superintendent Saxton's tenure with our district, we've succeeded in establishing a very inclusive budget review process, and have on the order of 25 plus or minus a little bit, but 25 experts on our budget in the community. I think, it doesn't sound like a very large number in a school district with about 12,000 students, but actually to have that many engaged citizens who really understand our budget, I think, is a true accomplishment. So during this this budget cycle, preparing for the upcoming year, our citizens who've been involved in the budget process have been involved in establishing very detailed priorities relative to what we might look at varying funding levels. And I'll hand the podium back to Superintendent Saxton to go over some of those details with you.
I would want to make sure that members of the committee would see that at $6.3 billion, the additional funding for our district would be about $4.639 million if we were funded at the $6.3 billion level. On the very last page of the handouts that we gave to you, this is the work that was done by our citizen committee this year as we walked through the budget in anticipation that perhaps there would be some additional funding above and beyond the EBL that would come to the Tigard Tualatin School District. And so I would go to the bottom of the page at the $4 million level and identify some of the things that this committee came forward with as recommendations for our district. The first on that list happens to be deferred maintenance. The district, you heard our chief financial officer talk about some of the reductions that we have made over time, and some of the things that we did, for example, in the very first year was a 10% reduction in staff, and what our effort was to maintain program and reduce elsewhere. One of those things that we reduced was our maintenance budget, and we have some deferred maintenance. And I thought it was really pretty interesting that a citizen committee would say one of the things that you need to do is deal with deferred maintenance. I don't like that that's one of the things that they would recommend, yet I know that their assessment is accurate, that that is something that we need to do. So they recommended $500,000 of an additional $4 million above EBL for deferred maintenance. Full-day kindergarten program with a poverty focus. I think this was one of the most difficult recommendations that the committee came forward with. We very much would like to have full-day no-pay kindergarten district-wide within our district. When the committee talked about how to get at providing full-day K for just students in poverty. It was a very difficult discussion, and one that they finally said, we're not sure how to do that for you. You all need to figure that out as the folks who are going to administrate this budget, should it come to pass. And so that's something that we're continuing to struggle with, but that would be $680,000 for all students in poverty.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Beckett?
Record?
I don't know who said it.
I did.
You did, all right.
Good voice recognition.
Yeah, thank you.
Rob, do you have the capacity for a full day capital that you could accommodate if you go in that direction?
So Representative Grisio or Chair Grisio, Senator Deckard, we believe that we do. We're busily trying to make sure that we do. If we did not, we think that we would have the capacity with a couple of additional buildings that we would need to put in place, perhaps at one elementary school. We just completed a building from a bond campaign that was passed in 2002, and so we do have better capacity than some districts to do that.
So coming from Sherwood, would Sherwood have that based on, I know it's been a year or two since you were there, what would be your assessment for Sherwood?
My assessment, Chair Grisio, Senator Deckard, would be that Sherwood would have a very difficult time with the capacity, classroom capacity, to be able to do that. They have passed a $98 million bond, and they will have that capacity in short order. Every school district will make different choices about what to do with these dollars, and these were the choices or the recommendations that our citizen committee came forward with, and they're very interested in full day kinder.
Okay. Before you go on, Superintendent, just one quick question. In terms of size of the districts, Tiger Tualatin is number, it's statewide. Do you know where Tiger Tualatin is?
I believe that we're number nine, as far as size-wise.
Okay. Don't mean to put you on the spot, but just to give the committee or kind of
and to help me.
An understanding of what our size is relatively.
Senator Devlin, you probably knew that off the top of your head, Senator Devlin.
I would guess. For a school district, they're a relatively large school district. They're not a Beaverton or a Portland, and probably never want to be.
Yes, no.
So you didn't know? You're making me feel better. You didn't know they were ninth?
I would guess that they were somewhere.
All right. Okay. So a little better. All right. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
Somewhere between 5 and 20.
Okay. Actually, I think number 9 is exactly right. I'll continue. On the third item there, discretionary funds, that's one of the items I always hate to have in a public document because it looks like, you know, the title there isn't very good, but when we look at the way that we report money to the state, dollars that are spent, that really means classroom materials and supplies. So when Mr. Burling says that we have some of the same science equipment at 12th and High from the day that it opened, that's the kind of thing that those dollars could be used for, new microscopes. We cut our material and supply budgets to the bone in 2001 and never have restored those, and so we have all kinds of classroom teachers that currently spend their own money to make sure they have adequate materials and supplies, and really feel a duty, as does the community, to reinstate some of those funds so that there's some adequacy in the number of funds that we need in order to provide adequate materials and supplies to our teachers. Textbooks and instructional materials, $200,000. Our district cut back very significantly the number of dollars that we spent on textbooks, and sometimes actually did not purchase new textbook adoptions as they came through the cycle. We worked very hard the past couple of years to be able to fix that situation. For our upcoming year, we're purchasing textbooks for English and language arts, which is really the heart of the curriculum, and that purchase is very expensive for our district, probably in the $800 to $1 million range. We have $400,000 in the budget. Year in, year out, it takes more than that. It would take about $600,000, so there's $200,000 for that. K-12 extended day academics. We have recognized in our district that when we focus on students who are struggling to achieve at the level that we would want all students to achieve, that they make significant gains. This would be an effort to offer some additional program outside the regular school day, both after school and over the course of the summer, to work specifically with those students that need some extension, and that can include a number of students, not just those that struggle, but also some of our more gifted and talented students who can use some additional instruction over time. Math literacy specialists, we have worked very hard with our reading literacy program, K-12 throughout the district. Math also is a very important effort for us, and we need some additional work at our middle school level in particular, and that literacy specialist will work with all math teachers to improve instruction. Classified FTE, that mostly would come in the area of instructional assistance. When we have additional instructional assistants, particularly K-3, that are working with students who are working to learn to read, we make significant gains. Also, a number of our instructional assistants work with our students who have special needs, and that amount was $200,000. Licensed FTE class size reduction, that's $1.54 million. That would allow us to add 20 teachers. If we look at that for as a 25-to-1 ratio, that allows us to offer a 25-to-1 ratio for 500 additional students, which really would allow us to offer a class size reduction to an additional school across our district. Our elementary schools are in the 500 to 600 range, and so it actually would allow us to reduce and focus on students for almost a whole additional school with 20 additional teachers, and so it would make a significant difference for our class size reduction. And then staff development, $150,000. We do have a teacher mentor program in our district. It is a pared back one. It's something that we have struggled mightily to maintain, and we do think that it's very important work that happens in our district to make sure that our new teachers, particularly in their first 3 years, are very well, have all kinds of staff development so that they can be successful in the classroom. And also it would give us an opportunity to work with other teachers across the district on staff development so that we have the best teachers that we can have in front of our students. And so that's the list that that the community came forward with. I've tried to stress to the community on numerous occasions these are recommendations and ones that we'll try to weave into our recommended budget as we work to put that forward.
I think that's a great summary of the kinds of impacts that our the budget numbers that we're looking at would potentially have on the Tiger-Tualatin School District. I think the one thing I might add is that it does, on one hand, it sounds like a relatively small number between a 6.25 and a full 6.3, and when we translate that down with our 1% approximately of the statewide budget for education, we're looking at something in the range of 8 teachers that would fund in our school district. I've learned over the last several years to my common denominator in this particular business is how many teachers does it fund, because that's where we impact kids right up front. And that is a material number in our school district and does and would affect 8 classrooms. And so it is something that any efforts to preserve the 6.3 number we would find very important to our school district.
And Director Chisholm, if I could, I'll also put it in a little bit different way as well, although it ends up being about 8 classroom teachers, so it ends up being about the same thing. The Citizen Committee struggled the most with the full-day kindergarten, and they recognized very much that there are very few things that a school district, we believe, can do for better bang for the buck when it comes to making sure that our students are going to be successful. It would cost us about $1.3 million for us to fully implement full-day kindergarten district-wide. We have some full-day now, but no pay full-day across the district, about $1.3 million. This committee allocated $680,000 in their in their recommendations. The additional $600,000 that would come to our district as the gap between 6.245 and 6.3 is about $600,000. That gets us to 1.28. I think we could probably come up with the additional $20,000 to close the gap to $1.3 million, which would allow us to add full day K district-wide, no pay for all of our students, and we think that would be a terrific investment. And that's the difference for us between 6.245 and 6.3.
Now, if you have any questions for us, John.
Senator Devlin? Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say, in their example for $4 million, in looking at SB 318, I think all but a couple of these items probably would fit within SB 318 as being some of the items that were identified. And one of the things we're trying to do in SB 318 was to give school districts a great deal of latitude. And we actually expected that with additional money, those would be some of the areas districts would choose to spend the money in. And I think you demonstrated that here, that many of these areas would be covered under SB 318 as it's currently written.
If I could respond, Chair Glazio, Senator Devlin, that's really true. The list is does come right along with Senate Bill 318, and I would point out that the additional dollars between the EBL and $6 billion for our school district is $121 per student, and then the additional gap between $6 billion and $6.3 would be another $208 a student. And therefore, we could easily, if the $300 million is what would be maintained in, say, the school improvement fund, that we could easily fund the things that are identified in the $4 million out of that additional $208 per student.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, just two quick questions. This is really helpful. I think this is the first at least school district we've looked at and kind of got a sense of what the budget would look like. I think the two questions I would ask is, one, I was talking to a gentleman, and I won't use kind of his vernacular, but the premise of his question to me was, we have a better environment for school funding than we've had in quite some time. This is going to, all the increase is going to get eaten up in labor costs. Can you respond how the Tigard School District, and I don't know at what point you are in your negotiations, you might have just negotiated and could say, we've answered that question for 2 or 3 years. But from your perspective as a superintendent or a school board chair, how would you respond to him?
Chair Galizio, Senator Deckard, we have had a view that our teachers deserve to be compensated fairly, compensated well, and to some degree that's independent of the level of funding that we might benefit from. The level of funding is going to determine how many teachers we have. If we have more money than we did a year ago, that doesn't mean that that frees up dollars to go pay salary increases. The salary increases are now, my background is business and I look at it, salary increases are a function of the market cost for personnel. And we want to be competitive with the teaching marketplace. And so we don't see that an extraordinary cost will occur from our contract negotiation. Now, I will admit to you that our first negotiating session is later this week. So wow. We shall see. But that is clearly... that clearly is our perspective.
Anything else you'd like to
add? I have nothing to add to that.
And then one other, Mr. Chair. So sustainability. I know that Tigard was looking at, and we've done, obviously, created a better reserve position for the state, which should be helpful in terms of at least having faith in this budget, sustainable. But I look at like full day K, and once it's up and running and you do the capital costs and hire the teachers, we know the elasticity of our income tax, and even with a good reserve fund. Is that something that you're factoring into your decisions if, say, we come right in at the ballpark we're at right now? Is that something that the Tigard School District is factoring in terms of investing some but also reserving some to ensure that these are sustained investments?
Chair Galizio, Senator Deckert, first we'd like to thank you all for the work that you've done putting a rainy day fund in place. I know that was very hard work and was sorely needed in our state. For those of us who went through the budget cuts in the 2001 and 2002 timeframe, it was a very painful process. And as we all recall, the uncertainty that we faced was as devastating as the actual cuts. Hmm. And we faced uncertainty literally right up until the end of the biennium with how much revenue was going to be able to fund that biennium, never mind the budget for the next biennium. It was very stressful for us all. With that in mind, our school district has recently enacted a policy of establishing a rainy day fund, and it is our desire to fill that rainy day fund over a reasonable and short period of time so that we can hopefully be prepared for the next cycle. And it is our belief that until such time the state is successful at potentially changing the revenue makeup to provide additional stability, that it is our view that rainy day funds at the state and local level are required. And so we will be heading in that direction in the current budget.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Morse, perfect timing.
With respect to the arts and music, did your district experience a significant reduction in those courses and offerings in previous budget periods?
Chair Galizio and Senator Morris, I believe that the arts and music, physical education in the elementary schools would be examples of the programs that we have fought over the years to maintain. And it's probably one of the reasons our class sizes are a little larger than we'd like to see them.
Hmm. Thank you. What are the, I mean, I'm sure it varies a lot, you know, in terms of what grade, but could you give us a ballpark of the class sizes?
Sure, certainly. Chair Gleasy, our current class sizes are at K-2, 1 to 24, and these are averages across the district. And these are our target levels. We actually have chosen a number, and we have a formula that we use to determine exactly where we're going to go. So we allow a plus or minus 3 before we change our allocation of FTE. So we could have a class as large as 27. We could have a class as small as 21 before we make a change. Actually, it would need to be 28 or 20 to make a change, so we allow 3. So 1 to 24 in grades K-2, 1 to 26 in grade 3, 1 to 28 in grade 4, and we staff our middle schools and high schools at 1 to 29. Now, they end up being larger than that because of the way staffing is done at middle schools and high schools, but our average class size at the secondary level is about 1 to 32 when it all turns down. So I would also tell you that our class sizes in the class size targets in 2000-2001 were 1 to 20 K-2, 1 to 22 grade 3, 1 to 25 grade 4, and a staffing of 1 to 25 grade 5-12. So a pretty big difference.
Great. I want to echo what Senator Decker said. It's very helpful to get this kind of snapshot and response. So really appreciate you taking the time to come down today and testifying. It's very useful and very helpful. And thank you again. Good to see you.
Thank you, Chair Gleason, members of the committee. We appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Absolutely. A pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay. Now I'd like to invite up Rob Hess. We're going to go to the Springfield School District. Rob Hess, Student Achievement Leader, and Jeff DeFranco, Public Relations Coordinator. I have two names, but I see three people, so
and
I'm sorry.
Former State Representative Al King, who's a member of the school board.
Oh, okay.
We have an additional visitor with us today. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to share with you what state school funding would mean for the 11,000 students of Springfield School District. I'm joined here today by Al Keith, a school board member, and as you've already noted, a former state legislator, and Dr. Rob Hess, our student achievement leader. I want to begin by stating that we do support the co-chair's $6.245 billion budget for K-12 education as a step in the right direction of restoring our state's investment in education. Although our needs at this time are greater than what the proposed budget will provide, we understand and acknowledge the difficult choices and trade-offs you must make as state legislators. Of course, as educators, we believe the $6.2 billion in the coalition's proposal is the appropriate allocation to move us forward with education. What I want to talk to you about today is really what an allocation of $6.245 billion will mean for our district, and specifically the type of programs that we will be able to fund through this allocation. But first off, I want to let you know, give you a little background of where we have been as a district over the past few bienniums. First off, during the 2001 biennium, the district was forced to cut $9 million worth of services. And so really since then, we've been in a rebuilding phase. And through the past few bienniums, we've been able to slowly build back some of our previous service levels, although we've never made it quite to pre-2000 levels. And as a district, we've been really committed to funding new innovations and funding the newest and best research-based practices. And we've been able to do that through a number of grant resources and one-time funds. But with any limited amount of pot of money, it does run out over time. And that's a position we find ourselves in as a district, that we really require this additional allocation of resources to be able to move and solidify these innovations into our general operating budget. So the first document I'd like to share with you, shove in front of you, it's entitled Increased Funding, How Increased Funding Can Help Support the Following Needs for K-12 Education in Springfield. And there's five areas on there that will give you an idea of the type of needs that we would be able to address or begin to address with this state school fund allocation. And one thing that I'll share with you that I noticed is this was not premeditated or put together, but as we look through the investing in student achievement in the coalition's materials, there's many of the same issues. They talk about, you know, literacy initiatives and instructional resources and investing in the classroom and class sizes and workforce quality, and those are all very aligned with the work that we're trying to do here. The first one is funding to help support new state requirements and mandates. The first of that being additional staffing in the areas of math and science to meet the new state graduation requirements. As these additional requirements come, there's a need for us to provide additional funding and staffing to support them. Additionally, Senate Bill 300, we've seen each year more students begin to take advantage of the opportunity to do higher education courses through funding through the district, so that's another thing that is growing and that would require additional funding. And finally, as we begin to implement the language arts graduation requirements with our incoming students to meet the 2010 high school graduation requirements, there's additional staffing there to ensure as we're adding language art teachers, we're not taking away from professional technical electives and other important programs to a comprehensive high school. Secondly is the area of funding the recommendations of our K-12 literacy initiative. We know, and the research tells us, that literacy is the gateway skill, that it is the skill that students must possess to be able to access all types of information. And if you're going to succeed in social sciences or mathematics or really any area of education, first and foremost, you must have strong foundation of literacy skills. And that's why it's a top priority for our district. And so a few areas that we've listed here are, first, instructional technology programs. And we've seen through instructional technology that there are many ways that we could provide one-to-one support for students through programs like Reading 180 and Reading Apprenticeship, where we would never be able to get there with staffing allocation to get that sort of support, but there's technology that can help provide one-to-one feedback to students. Secondly, literacy support teachers. This is something that we've piloted this year on a very small scale, and we've seen great success. And these teachers are out there working with the teachers in the field on an ongoing basis to embed literacy training and support. So they're not only providing upfront training, but they're observing lessons, they're following up and debriefing, and teacher skill and quality is one of the number one correlations of student success, and these teacher literacy coaches are really helping us impact teacher student literacy. And third is funding the new curriculum and literacy resources. As there becomes a lot of new research about what the best practice is to improve literacy, we need to get our materials and our curriculum and our resources up to speed to meet those best practices. The third area that we'll talk about today is funding for lower class sizes by reducing the student-teacher ratio. We have not been able to reduce this this ratio since the pre-2000 levels. And we believe with this amount of funding, we would not be able to reduce the level district-wide. And so we've looked at the most strategic areas to make an impact. In one of those areas, we know that reducing the student-to-teacher ratio in kindergarten through grade 2 is where research has shown that we can make an early and immediate and important impact on our students, so that way we get them off on the right foot and make them successful throughout our K-12 program. Additionally, as these new requirements have been brought to our district and throughout the state about math and science and language arts, we've had to raise the class sizes at the high school level across all our other different opportunities. And so being able to maintain and even possibly lower those class sizes is another goal of our district. The fourth area is funding for current innovations that must be shifted from one-time funds to the general fund. And these are things that we use one-time money, startup monies, grant dollars to get started, and they have proven to be a success for our district. They have proven to impact student achievement, and so we want to really build them into our ongoing program. The first is we do have a new teacher mentorship program where our new teachers are set up with retired teachers that were our star educators to really mentor them and support them in their new role. And of course we're interested and supportive of the teacher mentorship funding on top of the allocation that was proposed in the governor's original budget. Secondly, we've this year opened the Academy of Arts Academics. It's a small, rigorous high school that uses arts integration as the hook to engage students that may be on a path to leave or drop out of our schools. It was initial funding was received through the Oregon Small Schools Initiative and a number of other community partners, as well as an allocation of one-time district resources. And to move this program that's already showing great success at its early levels to the general fund is another goal of ours as a district this year. And then the continued support of phase one of the literacy recommendations. We've been able to do meet some of the initial recommendations through one-time funds, but we want to move those and make them systematic in our ongoing operating budget, as well as begin to move into phase two and phase three levels of the literacy recommendations. So those are our first four levels. And I'm gonna hand it over to Dr. Rob Hess, who's gonna further explain these priorities under Area 5 and how we came to this prioritization process.
I think one of the things that our superintendent really wanted to focus on this year. I'm sorry,
for the record.
Oh, for the record.
For the record.
Rob Hess.
My name's Rob Hess.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Springfield School District.
For the record.
My first time. Thanks. One of the things that last year in the springtime, we got a new allocation of funding from the state. And we were really excited, and we huddled in a room, and we had to find out how to spend it in a couple of days. And so this year, our superintendent said, you know what? We're going to do a process this year so that if we're planful and systematic about resources that we get, and we can have a long-range vision on this. And so what we did is we set up a three-level system of things that are what we call the core budget obligations, innovations that we started and we wanted to keep going, and then a third level of things, items that need additional funding and resources that are identified throughout the district. So we spent about 2 or 3 months generating the list in each of those categories. And what you have in front of you is the one with the yellow highlighter where it says budget priority list. These were the items that ended up on that third list of things to prioritize. So hopefully you have it there. And what you can see is in this process, instead of attaching, you know, we all get lost in the big numbers. And so what we did is we said, you know what, let's make this real practical. We called something a resource unit. $35,000 equals one RU, resource unit. And we attached units to all of these things. And then we gave people 30 units to spend. How would you spend it? We had them spend them in like groups with administrators that were similar to them, in dissimilar groups. We had them talk about them, and banter back and forth about why something was needed. A lot of real helpful conversation. And through this process, we had them, you know, voting and putting, placing their chips in different ways over about a 3-month period of time. And these five areas that are highlighted all kept surfacing to the top. Now, that's not to say that anything else on this list isn't equally valuable, but these were things that are the people in our system kept saying, these are the first place where we would put new money.
So, Dr. Hess, sorry to interrupt. People are, so who are we talking about when you're saying they and them?
We started with just the administrators in the system. So school administrators,
okay.
Maintenance administrators. We had about 60 people total that were basically involved in this work. And we really wanted to find out what the leaders in the school system, where their priorities were before we went to the community and say, hey, what do you think? So in this process, once we have this list together, we also went to our budget committee, and Al can talk about the board, sitting on the board and the budget committee, how they saw this as it came through. But our first take was just to say, what are the priorities in our system, and where would we put our resources if we were to get new resources? So when we talk about the number 6.3, or the number now is 6.245, is it? We're excited because this will hopefully get to some of these priorities that we have listed in front of you. So on that section there of the fifth section on back on this sheet, as you can see there, it's staffing for ELL and after-school programs and ongoing technology replenishment and meeting the literacy recommendations and lowering the class size are all the five top things that the leaders in our system say that this is where we put our money first.
So, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, what I'd like to follow that with, we've talked a lot about programs and impact on student success, and what we want to talk about is outcomes and accountability. As a district, we've been very accountable and transparent with student outcomes to our community, whether they're good or bad, and we always look to continuous improvement, how we can improve. And as we look at this this increasing investment from the state in our K-12 education program, what we want to share with you is what we believe some of the student outcomes will be that we'll be able to showcase. If we are here presenting in this in front of this committee, you know, in the next biennium or a few bienniums down the line, and this funding continued to come through and this reinvestment in education took place, the type of outcomes you could expect from our students. The first one, which I think is a primary goal of our district, is really an educational program that produces students that are both college ready and work ready when they graduate from our system and they're ready to transition into that next stage and be successful. High school graduates that have received a more rigorous educational program, as well as a comprehensive list of opportunities. We believe we would see an increase in student achievement beginning in the early grades, specifically as a result of our investment in lowering class size at the kindergarten through second grade level. We believe we see strong literacy skills across all our students, allowing them to be successful in school, the world, and to access information across all subject areas. We would continue to be highly accountable to our community and committed to continuous improvement as we annually report our gains in student achievement and what programs brought us there. So to share a little bit more about how we're accountable to our community, I'll pass it back to Mr. Hess.
Yeah, members of Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This document here is our accountability report that we publish every year. And what we do is we reflect on our vision and values in this report. And if you look at, you know, just to highlight the innovations that our district was trying to do, and this is why this funding is so important to us, you know, pages 15 and 16, 17, the last few pages of the document, it really, program after program, we're looking for ways to improve. How can we impact student achievement? We're constantly asking that question. And the document talks about how we've invested in professional development because we believe and know that teacher quality is the number one, you know, indicator of your level of achievement. So we've invested a lot of resources there. And as we've done that, we've seen student achievement increase. So this is kind of a helpful document for us and for our community to communicate what we believe and how we're trying to get there through the funding support that we receive from the state. So we are glad to be here to talk about this.
Chairman Galeazzo, members of the committee, thank you very much for asking for this input. Really proud of our district, Springfield School District, has really become a pretty innovative district, and I think really pretty much of a blue chip district. When you ask about size, I think we're 10. For an anecdote, when we were 04-05 and we were interviewing for a new superintendent, some of you know our superintendent Nancy Golden quite well, I was a little reluctant perhaps to hire her because she was really full of a lot of good ideas, but the budget was so bad. We were having to play defense. And so I was thinking, well, maybe we just need a defensive budget person because we can't afford to do the innovative side of the equation. Well,
Representative Jensen just reminded me I have to ask you to state your name.
I forgot. How about that? Al King, Springfield School Board. Thank you very much.
And thank you. Former state representative.
Yes. He kind of enjoyed that.
And so getting back to the story, Nancy Golden, our superintendent, came on board and she said, how about doing a Springfield quality education model, you know, much like what is done at the legislative level. And we didn't just have a school board meeting and do it. It was a nice idea. We did it broad brushstroke of the whole community, thousands of people involved in that dialogue. And so we came out with what is the Springfield Quality Education Model. Where that went was that not only did we value the community priorities, but some good ideas got exposure. And then those good ideas also got exposure because we were using the Quality Ed Model with a number of people who do grants, private sector and public sector, and that came out with some very innovative programs. And so, you know, if we don't have the opportunity to come up with some innovative ideas, we never get them in there in the first place, because we know that when they're down years, then something gets cut. But if the good idea never had a chance to be alive in the first place, you know, it's gone. And so our district really has a number of really effective programs. I'm not going to take the time to go into, but I respect the process, and we're very proud of the leaders that have come forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative King. Are there any questions or comments? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I simply would like to add to Al's comment that as I've been observing the Springfield School District over many years, the place is very lively. They have a number of innovative things that they're doing. I agree completely with his comment about the superintendent. And I've participated myself in a couple of the community meetings and in some of the board meetings where they've been talking and dealing with innovative issues. And I would, my belief is that they have a strong community support, strong support among their parents, which of course is a key to the success of any educational enterprise. And I am extremely gratified with what Springfield has been doing with the resources they have. I'm really pleased to see you here today.
Senator Walker.
Yeah, thank you. They have done outstanding work in Springfield. They're innovative, as Mr. King said. Nancy Golden is one innovative superintendent. They even involve students in the conversation. Ms. Golden has a regular group of students that she meets with to plan what goes on in schools. In fact, last legislative session, we had some students from the DECA project at Springfield High School come and testify on that junk food bill we had that I'm so glad is on your side of the building this year. And, you know, they just find it, and the laptop computers and the classroom project, and it's just incredible what they've been able to do. And I just appreciate that.
And that's why this budget cycle is so important to us, in that to do a lot of these innovative programs, we've tapped one-time money, we tapped grant funds, and now we're to the point where those are running out. And so being able to do a 6.3 or 6.2245 will enable us to get some of these innovations into the regular budget, into the general fund, so that they're sustained.
And Mr. Chair, I also noticed that you were having the same problem many schools across the state are with 10th grade math.
Very true.
What's going on with these sophomores and why they're not making it in the math department, but we've got to do something.
Mr. Chair and Senator Walker, I've been getting coached now on this proper protocol. The 10th grade math is an issue, and it's an issue statewide. Yeah. But there are some excellent teachers out there. They're doing some professional development around the state because there are having some schools that have seen incredible jumps. So one of them being Newburgh High School is kind of leading the way. So we've had that trainer work with our staff too, and we're going to see some great increases. I think the key issue with that is difficulty of the test and expectations. And so now with the new law of the 2012 graduation requirements of nothing of algebra and beyond is what counts for graduation, we're going to see expectations for increased math skills lowered all the way down to the sixth grade level, and that's when we're going to see some increases there.
I think that isn't a done deal yet. I do.
We're acting like it is, so we're not waiting for it to change.
Well. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen.
How many of your 03 8th grade class, what percent of those will graduate from high school this year?
So,
I'm going to leave that for my chauffeur, Mr. Chair, and Representative Jensen.
Thank you.
Yeah, 8%. So, Mr. Chair and Senator Jensen, what we would see, are you talking about incoming freshmen in the 03?
No, I'm talking about the 8th grade graduates of 03. Mm-hmm. How many of them are going to graduate from high school this year?
07.
In 07.
Okay. So what we would look like for that would be... regular diploma or modified GED, all the other tags that they put to that stuff. Because there's two numbers that people mess with. There's the real number, which is the diploma, regular diploma. That's around 65%. If you add in all those alternatives, then you're getting up closer to 90-95.
95%. You're showing a 3% dropout, 4% dropout per year?
Mr. Chair and Representative Jensen, so there's two numbers. There's what's called, the state reports as the dropout number, and that's the number, that's the percentage of students that actually quote-unquote drop out. And so but Rob's number 95 would actually be 96%, and there's a 4% dropout. There's what we refer to as early leavers or students that are completing something other than the traditional diploma, and that's about 20% of the students between the time when they graduate to 8th grade to the time they walk across the stage. And many of those students, it's not that they're not getting some sort of diploma, but they're not graduating with their traditional diploma. So either they're doing the GED, they're getting a modified diploma because they're special ed or special needs, they're getting an alternative education diploma because they're going through one of our alternative programs. And those numbers, although they change from districts across the state, they're pretty pretty consistent, where you have this much smaller quote-unquote dropout rate, but a much larger rate of students who don't begin the program and do not graduate with the traditional diploma from a comprehensive high school.
Quick clarification. But you said 55% will graduate from high school with a traditional diploma.
65. I think the statewide average is around 68%. It's in there at our schools. They kind of vary from year to year, and it fluctuates between around 60 up to 70 year to year. So that's a number we're trying to drill down. And one of the ways to do that is to help get kids' algebra skills up to the place they need to be, so they can and get their reading skills up, so they can match the materials. But generally, we can say about a third of the kids don't make it with a regular diploma every year, coming from 8th grade to senior year.
Representative Edwards, final question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. DeFranco, at the beginning of your testimony, you noted that the district cut about $9 million worth of services back in the 2001-03 biennium. Hypothetically speaking, if we were to pass out a budget of $6.245 billion, which
Would you simply be able to shift programs that have since been funded with one-time revenues to general fund, or would you be able to add back any programs that you lost during that period?
Mr. Chair and Representative Edwards, it would be a combination of those two things as we've looked at it. One thing that it would allow us to do is bring many of these one-time fundings programs into the general fund, and we believe it will be able to do that. Additionally, it will allow us to be able to make progress at some of these additional things that we've talked about, whether that's the student-teacher ratio or the K-12 literacy initiative. But as you look at our both this, the first list we provided you with and that long prioritization list, we're by no means in a place where 6.245 would be able to bring us back, you know, bring everything into the program, bring back everything that we've cut, and do the things that we believe are most important to do now. And so we really look at this, and we hope that you look at it as well as a step in the right direction, and that we hope that it's part of a long-term education reinvestment by the state. And we're committed to, you know, to continue to work with you to be able to get there over the next few bienniums.
Mr. Chair, quick editorial comment then?
Yeah, editorial.
Editorialize. So by way of summary then, is it safe to say that the 6.245 billion budget gets you to somewhere in the, you know, 2003-2005 biennia plus range? Or is it slightly above where you were during that period?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Edwards, what it allows to do, it'll get us back to that. And one thing that came out a result of these challenging budget cuts is the resources are in slightly different places, because as educators, we know more now than we knew then. And as we continue to look at, we had to cut back things like, you know, cut down to bare bones with, you know, arts and music specialists and our professional technical programs.
Mm-hmm.
And so as these resources come back, it hasn't allowed us necessarily to bring all those up to, you know, pre-2000 levels and put the money in professional development and literacy initiatives and lowering class size. So it's a combination of, it's not exact. We've been able to bring back that program and do this. We've had to make some, you know, some tough decisions similar to you as we went forward about what do we bring back as well as what do we know is most important now that we want to put in front of that.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, in 1999, the quality education model was 6.2 million. So we're only 8 years late.
Thank you.
All right, with that, Mr. DeFranco, Dr. Hess, and Representative King, thank you very much for coming today. We really appreciate it. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing, and we are adjourned.
Thank you all.